these were Avenue of Honour trees, Jeremy, planted in 1918, before the end of the war, as most avenues were, strangely enough. And they were a species that looked pretty good in botanic gardens around the world. A big Atlantic cedar, there's several in Melbourne and the Hamilton Botanic Gardens that are great specimens. Here they grew not too badly, but where the rocky subsoil was, they were a bit stunted and a bit ordinary. So over the years, they'd been sort of hacked about a bit by the power companies with their power lines and people straightening roads and getting access to their homes. So the ones in the main street were a bit of a health hazard and just looked a little bit ordinary in some cases. So there was a push to get rid of the trees, and the Progress Association then, we decided that this idea of tree carving would be a pretty nifty one.
So I think there's about nine stumps that were kept?
10 stumps kept, yeah, and they're carved sort of for local reasons, local stories. We didn't want Simpson and his donkey and, you know, Sir John Monash or whatever. So the chainsaw carver we engaged from Melbourne read a history book about our World War I soldiers that I'd written and sort of took on board some of the yarns and some of the experiences of a small country town, our country town, and people who went from here.
I like the way you casually just say, a book I'd written. So obviously there were quite a lot of stories there.
Well, it's about 110 people from just the narrow district, probably within 10 km of Dartmoor. And of those 110, about a quarter of them didn't come back. There was a couple of women who were nurses, quite famous, but we lost a quarter of those men.
So how did you then go about working out what was going to be represented, or how did that all come together?
Pretty much with the carver. He was limited in some cases by the trees. You know, some of them were pretty spindly, so he couldn't do a very big sculpture. So, you know, there's one of a 303 rifle. Well, that's about how big the tree was. And then there's another one with three people standing nearby, parents and a son farewelling the son off to war. And it was a stout tree. So the carver, he sort of worked with the size of the tree and, as I said, the stories that he'd read and some ideas that we had as well.
Do they tell any individual stories there, or is it very much more just a general experience, I guess, of you know, the war perhaps and what was going on at the time?
There's a couple that tell specific stories. Two of the carvings are for the people whose tree it was, if that makes sense. Mm. The tree is in its location, planted by the family of that service person. One is a soldier, Private Sidney Smith, who was killed on the very first landing at Gallipoli on the 25th of April. And his tree is carved, not so much in his likeness, but it's a soldier, you know, landing at the cliffs at Gallipoli type of thing, trying to get up the hill. The other one is a nurse, Sister Rachel Pratt, and she's carved in her image. She was, I guess, famous for being in the wrong place at the wrong time. She was in a medical centre that got bombed by a German plane and got wounded badly with shrapnel through the neck and back, and she was awarded a military medal for that, quite a prestigious honour by the King in Buckingham Palace. And her medal and her story is on display at the National War Memorial in Canberra.
Now, the order of them then, is there any reason for the way they're ordered, or is that just, as you say, dictated by what the trees were like?
Pretty much by what the trees were like. You can sort of work through from either end, really. What's intriguing about, you know, towards the end is a soldier playing two up. He's playing the game. And the war was also referred to by the Australian soldiers as the game, you know, in a sort of euphemism. If they really did think about it and called it what it was, I guess, you know, it just make things harder for them. But that's a good place to start. But at the other end, Rachel Pratt's tree, I guess she's looking up towards all the other soldiers and all the other carvings, and sort of looking over them in a sense. So that's also a good place to start. What is interesting about the positioning of the carvings is that the second one along from Rachel Pratt is a mother receiving a telegram, and she's facing away from all the rest of the carvings as if she doesn't want to know about them.
Now, the artist then was Kevin Gilders, whose work is pretty well known around the southwest. I think he most recently did the spud picker statue in Croyt, but he's done plenty of other things as well. So this must have been one of his biggest jobs, though, I would imagine.
This took several years for him. He really took on it as a love, but as funding came through from different agencies, You know, he'd come up for a few weeks at a time. Once he finished these, we were pretty happy with his work, and we got him back to do a couple of nursery rhyme carvings at the village green as well. So we've got a lot of his work, and it's absolutely brilliant. The shame of the First World War carvings probably is that the species of timber is not that durable for outdoor exposed work, so they won't last forever. And you'll need to see them quickly.
It's just as well that you did like them, because I imagine you can't really go back and do it again, can you? With a chainsaw and a tree, it's pretty final.
Oh, yeah, and it's just remarkable to see him with a piece of chalk to start with, a couple of lines. Obviously had an idea of his images, but he doesn't try and get, you know, picture-perfect type finish. In fact, you know, he calls himself a chainsaw carver, and there's only a couple that have been... had some touch-up work with an angle grinder to get some fine features in the face. The rest is just, you know, a long bar to start with on the chainsaw and then working down to a smaller little unit at the end. But just amazing work, yes. Yeah. But if you slipped and took them off at the stump, well, that's it's all over.
Yeah, anyone that's seen him work will know that, as you say, it is quite amazing the way that things emerge out of the tree stumps. So how did he, when it was going on, how much of an event was it for Dartmoor? Was everyone gathering around and watching what he was doing?
Oh, people were really intrigued. Certainly any passing traffic would stop. We didn't really want too many people to look at the safety side of things and how he was operating. No, we had a couple of locals who were helping clean up for him and supply him with drinks and food, because each carving took between 1 and 2 days, and Kevin works a decent day. You know, he'd be 6 or 8 hours out on the chainsaw, depending on the fineness required and the detail, but you know, between sort of 8 to 16 hours work per carving.
And I mean, they're big. They're I don't know how tall the tallest one would be, but because I'm hopeless with these things, but I don't know. Would that be 2.5 metres maybe? Maybe even 3?
Oh, I'd say at least 3 metres on some of them. Bigger than life size, the figures. Yes, if we were the size of those carvings, we'd be giants, I think, Jeremy, wouldn't we? We'd be
stacking under every single doorway.
we'd be starring in Harry Potter.
Now, you mentioned that the tree species hasn't, or isn't perhaps the ideal. What condition are they in now? We were just tapping a couple of them before, and you can hear a bit of hollowness. What does that tell you?
The rot from the subsoil is progressive, and despite fungicides and oils and fiberglassing up several areas, you know, it's an ongoing process. We carved them off the ground, or we got Kevin to carve them, you know, a metre off the ground to start with, because we thought that at some point we might go through and chop them off, and then we could put them under cover somewhere. But I think we've decided that in situ, in their place, you know, they're the stumps of the trees, to remove them is maybe half going away from the original idea of, you know, planting a tree in that spot for the service person.
So what do you do to look after them then, apart from touching them up here and there?
Well, that's it. It's getting a bit of fiberglass bog and a couple of dedicated locals who volunteer to do that. And certainly the oils and paints that are used, there's a bit of technical work going into that. And, you know, we got one of the big paint companies, the manager came through one day to look at the carvings, and he's, you know, donated a fair bit of materials, which is fantastic.
Now, how much of an attraction are they as well? Do you often see people pulling in and just to have a look at the carvings?
Well, if we were standing on the road, we'd just about be run over this morning, Jeremy, because as we've sort of stood here, a couple have stopped, usually with camper vans and caravans, and they'll go for a wander. They might stay in town overnight, but generally they're just passing through. So certainly there's that sort of traffic, and I think district people know about them. I don't know that, you know, they'd come up just for a day trip, but they'll certainly, if they've got visitors, they might, you know, go for a tour and go in for a couple of other places as well, do Portland, Dartmoor, Mount Gambier, whatever.
As memorials, as far as memorials go, they must be fairly unique as well, aren't they? There's probably not many, I can't think of any other tree carvings that serve the same memorial sort of purpose.
Well, we did steal the idea a little bit. There is a couple of others. Maybe the first, I don't know, but Lake's Entrance was written up in an RSL magazine that I'd looked at, and they'd had a couple of big cypress trees that they were trying to remove to straighten the road or something through the main part of town of Lake's Entrance. And I think they'd done, you know, they'd done sort of Simpson and his donkey and general war themes rather than specific to their area. But we did have them to go on as our guide. So, but ours are better. And we've got more.